Greetings from Podcastville. It's Monday, the 28th of January, you bad motherfuckers. The Church of What's Happened Now is brought to you by Squarespace. Are you ready to start a new business? You want it to stand out? Well, get started with Squarespace. Think it, dream it, make it. With Squarespace, destiny is calling. It says you need a new website, so do me a favor. Make it with Squarespace. The future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. What I'm going to do is this. A lot of people don't even know what Squarespace is. You can create a beautiful website, turn your ideas into a website. You can blog or publish content, and you can sell products and services of all kind. Squarespace does this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers. So what I'm going to do is this. Head to squarespace.com right now, and get a free trial when you're ready to launch. Use the offer code CHURCH. CHURCH to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com. Enter church. The church is also brought to you by Onnit. Listen, it's a new year with a new set of rules. You're trying to be a better person. Beside your goals, Onnit is the way to start it. Whether it's the Alpha Brain or the Shroom Tech Sport or the Shroom Tech Immune, you know I live and die by these things. Onnit is the way to go. Do me a favor. Go to Onnit.com right now and look at the great selection of supplements that they have, from the oils to the jerky. I mean, everything is top notch. I know Aubrey. I know how his mind works. He is a brilliant man. If you really, really want to get your mind in tune and started, Alpha Brain's the way to go. You got 100% money back guarantee, even if you don't take the product. Who else does that? Nobody. Onnit. So do me a favor. Go to Onnit.com right now and press in.
Church.
Bam! And get 10% delivered to your motherfucking house. All right? Take this fucking mule, Lee. Oh, shit. Here you go. You thought we were coming out light on a Monday morning? Are you fucking kidding me or what? Because at the end of the day, it's the truth.
Dang.
Groove is in the heart, motherfuckers. What? Monday morning, cocksuckers. Get it together. Duncan Trussell.
Hello.
The Christ Killer.
Hello.
Uncle Joey. Here we go. Shake that ass.
With satisfaction when we're done. Satisfaction of what's to come. No walls, only the bridge. My supper dish, my fricatesh wish.
Sing it, baby.
I couldn't ask for another.
Monday morning, let's do this, motherfucker.
No, I couldn't ask for another.
Duncan fucking Trussell on a Monday morning. Who's better than us?
Thank you for having me, man. It's
thank
so
you.
Cool. This is so wonderful to finally be on your show.
This is the first time you've been at this studio.
Yeah, that's right. Have I been on your show before?
Yeah.
On the phone, but not in studio. Alive,
I don't
alive
think
one
studio.
At the Ice House, not in studio.
Really?
Alive one at the Ice House.
The night that you sent us when we did the acid, and you sent us the video of
the
transgender guy.
Yeah.
With Harry, you couldn't tell whether he had a pussy.
I don't think
dick.
He was transgender.
I don't know what he was.
He just had a small penis.
He started singing, dancing.
He was just dancing.
Music. I
yeah.
sent that to everybody on acid that night.
I remember it was a great joy to hear you laughing and knowing
oh
that
God.
I had sent that to you. It was awesome.
And the only person who got pissed at me to send it to him was Rogan. And
really?
I got tons of Christians on there. Rogan was like, what the fuck is that, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm doing good.
Congratulations on fatherhood.
Thank you.
I mean, when I had my child, you were the first one at the hospital with a camera.
Yeah.
We went to breakfast.
That's right.
We spoke about the future, and here we are 6 years later, and the seats are reversed.
Unbelievable.
What do you think? When was the child born?
The third.
And it just, what do you think?
It's the best.
25 days into fatherhood.
Yeah.
And what are you thinking so far?
It's like I have had more experience with death than birth. So, because I've watched both my parents die, and what's wild about it is it reminds me of this thing I heard, opposites stand back to back. And so there's all these similarities in birth and death that are, it's the complete opposite. So in death, you've got the hospice worker who comes. In birth, you have the midwife. In death, when people are dying, they like something else enters the room. Like, it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's calming. It's the opposite of what you might think it would be. It's like, it reminds you of something. It's that sense of like, you know, when you can almost remember a song, but you can't remember it. But it's like, what is this? This is some, I know what this is, but it's surreal, you know? It's like, there's a thing. You ever heard of a fey light? You ever heard of fey light?
No.
So when someone's dying, they have a kind of light around them sometimes. I had this guy on who studies death, people who come back, who like were brain dead or their heart stopped. And it's a fascinating phenomenon because all over the planet, they all report the same fucking thing. But I had him on.
What do they say when they come back?
So it goes, it's like you, the light thing, you see a light, you see yourself, your body, but you look different than the way you look in a mirror because you're seeing yourself for the first time. Because when you look at yourself in the mirror, you're just seeing yourself a reflection. But in this way, you're like, you look different apparently than you thought you looked. And then I guess like hearing your voice for the first time on a tape recorder. And then also the what's called the life review happens, which is you sort of, we think of it in the movies, they usually show it like you're like watching a TV or something. And it's like, you know, you're like Scrooge or some shit watching what you did. But there's more of a sense of not just watching it, but feeling the way you made everyone around you feel. And so you feel the way you made the people around you feel. And there's some justice in there and some sadness in there and some, you know, love in there and joy in there. And you just feel how you impacted the world while you were there. And then universally, this is around the planet, they report this, a fucking like monkey comes running out of the darkness and fucks your mouth for like 10 minutes. And then that's usually you wake back up in your body. But the monkey thing, they don't talk about a lot. It's really fucking weird. But that's universal.
That would ruin it for me. Like, that would fucking ruin it for me. Like, I just saw my life
by a monkey.
I just remembered all the highlights of my life that I yearned to see.
Yeah.
There was a movie that was released in the 70s called Beyond and Back. And I've never been able to find it. And it was in the movie theaters. I paid to go see it, about people who had death experiences, came back and reported what they saw.
Yeah.
I was involved in something when I was a kid where I wasn't in the room, but I was tight with the brother and the mom and the whole family. She had a brain tumor. And that night she went into a coma or something like that. In the middle of the night she snapped out of the coma and said, "Open the window. My grandfather wants me to go." She was tight with her grandfather. And they were like, "What are you saying?" And she's like, "Just open the window. My grandpa wants me to go, blah, 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 blah." And then she ended up living. She doesn't remember. I asked her years later. We had grown up together. And I go, "When you went under, where did you go?" And she goes, "It was just warm."
Yeah.
She goes, "I just felt warm." So I've always believed, you were saying that, would across the street from a funeral parlor.
That's right.
And I was like, I've always lived close to something to do with a funeral. I've always had death around me, and it's very sad. Mm. But it's death and birth are very similar.
Yeah.
You do feel, I've been in a room for two births, and I've been in one room when somebody was dead. I found them dead. And then I've been to tons of funerals. That's why I don't go to wakes, because of that feeling.
Right.
But even at a wake, there's a sense of warmth in the room.
Yeah, that's right.
Even at a wake, how sad and morbid it is, there is a sense of warmth.
Yeah, beyond warmth. I mean, it's a, you know, we're just figuring things out here as a species. We're just figuring things out. And one of the qualities of being a human these days is you just sort of naturally think we've figured everything out. You know, like it's a thing. You just say, "Oh yeah, no, we know now that this or that," but we don't know anything, man. Like, we don't know anything. I just had this crow researcher on my podcast. She discovered the crows are necrophiliacs. You know, crows fuck the corpses of dead crows. They just found that out. They didn't know that. 5% of crows, if a crow's around a dead body, 5% of crows will fuck it. And then another crow will like land on the crow and fuck the crow. They just found that out. That's like new data. But I was asking her other stuff. You know, she's studying birds, and like, there's so much we just have no idea about birds.
Do animals fear death, do you think?
Well, the crows have funerals. For like when a crow encounters a dead crow, it calls other crows into the area. So all these other crows land around the dead crow and they react to it in a very specific way. Elephants, when they find bones, they like lift them up and like seem to have some connection with them. So there's like a few animals besides humans who sort of react to death with some sense of realizing that this is sad, this is mournful, this is there's something in it that's poignant. And but you know, man, we're like, we think, so we don't know. Death is the great unknown, big question mark. We have no fucking idea what it is. Some people think nothingness, absolute oblivion, you're gone forever.
I don't believe that.
Well, I think it's, I don't either, but I think
it would be a fucking hilarious if it is the truth. But something that I've lived through as a 56-year-old man tells me there's something out there.
Oh, yeah.
There's people who look over us. There's angels. There's something.
For sure.
There's something. I just did the Danny Brown thing, and we talked about ghosts. And I know for a fact, and this is Joey talking to you as a man, when the house I grew up in North Bergen, that house had ghosts in it, disgruntled ghosts.
Yeah.
Disgruntled ghosts that I had to move out of there. For 2 years, I went to school. I lived, that was my house, my mother, that was my family.
Yeah.
But I stayed at a friend's house. The whole sixth grade year and half the seventh grade year, I stayed at my house. I stayed away from the house. And then after my mother died was when I found out that a guy had killed himself in the garage. He did the whole close the garage and, you know.
Carbon monoxide.
And then when we were kids, we would walk around and there was woods. And on our block, there was a big brick wall.
Yeah.
And they told us that it was an orphanage. When we were growing up, it was. And then somebody about 7 years ago put something up on Facebook, the real story about the Givenad orphanage. And it was on Givenad Terrace in Charles Court. And it was an orphanage that burnt down, and a bunch of kids died in there.
Yeah.
So they just took that, those two blocks. One is a loop block, one of those blocks that you loop around.
Yeah.
And given that terrace is a dead end. So they always said there were the two bad luck blocks.
Yeah.
So while I lived there, my mother died, the kid two doors died from me, died when we were growing up. Just something. The energy, even when I go down there now, the house is for sale.
Oh.
The house is for sale.
Your original house?
Yeah, where I grew up.
Oh, shit.
I just see, I still got it on my phone, the picture. House is for sale. They want $350. I thought about it for about 2 minutes. I know I'd have to sink $200 into it to modernize it
to
2019. I thought about it, but then I thought about what lived in that house. What was really, really, really in that house.
Yeah.
And I put a kibosh in it.
I heard this shit on Art Bell, the best explanation for ghosts ever, which was, it's actually not ghosts. It's time is happening at once. And so like in a place where some shitty thing happens, because like we perceive time as like being in the moment that we're in right now, but that suicide is like on repeat. It's happening over and over and over and over. And that's what a ghost is. A ghost is just like a kind of echo, a temporal echo that's sort of like trapped in this dimension and is bouncing around in there. It's like not so much an entity. Though on the other hand, man, I've talked to many people who say, well, yeah, maybe, but there's fucking like a whole ecosystem, so to speak, of sentient disembodied beings that are around us at all times. And you say that, you sound crazy, you know, but it wasn't that long ago that people didn't know there were germs. They didn't know there was bacteria. You know, they had no idea. They didn't know you should wash your hands. They didn't know there was, and if you started saying, oh, you know, there's like tiny little evil beings that are actively trying to kill you, that if you just wash your hands, you're not gonna get sick as much. People would look at you like, you're out of your fucking mind. What are you talking about? There was a doctor who started recommending that other doctors wash their hands before surgery. You know, when they're delivering babies, because the infant mortality rate was so high, and he figured out, like, oh, yeah, if your hands are dirty.
Are you fucking blaming me?
Look it up. There used to be a saying, a gentleman does not wash his hands. You know what I'm saying?
What year did this change? What year did this finally...
I don't know the year.
I mean, that... I don't know about you. I've been washing my hands since 19 fucking... I feel dirt on my hands. It drives me crazy. I think it was Lee that's saying that he doesn't like the jelly on his hands.
I don't like anything sticky. Like, 1847, they first practiced...
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, man.
I just knew I don't like my hands dirty.
No, dude. Doctors were like... would have their fucking hand... in a dead body, just like, what the fuck is this? They didn't know what it was yet. It was like to get the right to look into a dead body at the time. It's not like it is now. And then like they would go deliver a baby with like fucking nasty corpse blood all over him, and they'd just pull the baby out, and the fucking mother would get like, you know, the very least vaginosis or something, and the baby would get sick. This doctor ended up in a mental asylum. He went crazy because he knew he was right. And other doctors are like, what are you talking about? We don't need to wash our hands. And like, he went nuts because he knew he was right.
Is there still a lot to be discovered? Everything feels so advanced now. Michael, there's not much left to be discovered. But is there, do you think?
Well, yes. This is the great... Absolutely. That you know, everyone's absolutely. Like talking about conspiracies all the time. This conspiracy and that conspiracy. But the real conspiracy is the one against yourself, where you trick yourself into thinking, we've figured it all out. And it's... insanity. We haven't figured out shit, man. Like half, like a huge part of the planet's covered in water. We don't know what's down there. You think we know what's down there? We don't know what's down there. And then there's huge swaths of the planet that are covered in trees, you know, and only just now we're kind of figuring it out. Not to mention the fucking ice. When that stuff's melting, now we're seeing like formations and structures, finding mammoths and shit in there. But you know, it's convenient to imagine that because you saw like 5 episodes of Cosmos, you now understand everything about the planet. Not to mention like just the obvious shit right in front of us, which is that dolphins have a language that we don't know, but they're talking to each other. Crows talk to each other. They talk to each other, you know? They're saying shit, and science is like, I don't know what that is. Meanwhile, we're like trying to listen to aliens. We've got massive satellites. China just like invested all this money in these insane fucking satellites to try to pick up some alien transmission.
You think animals, you think cats talk to each other? I think they work more telepathically, cats.
Yeah.
And look at I had one situation where I broke up the brothers. Both of them are dead now. But when we moved, we made a mistake and broke up the brothers. Terry took one brother in one car. And I took the brother in my car, and I beat traffic before her, and I brought him into the apartment first. I'll never forget this. And I let the 3 cats I had loose, and Harry was looking for his brother. And he started making a distinct noise I never heard again. Like, he just started going into an anxiety, and he was making this...
Yeah.
And it wasn't a hiss or nothing. It was just this really weird thing. And when Terry brought Demi up and let Demi out, they both went up to each other and started making that noise. I never heard them do it again.
Weird. Wow.
And I knew that's when I learned the bond between them. I knew that if something would happen to the other one couldn't handle it. And sure enough, one died and the other one died 3 weeks later.
Wow. They
couldn't handle it.
That's crazy.
I'm not a very religious person, but like the... older I get, it's unmistakable how energy is real, and like how there is a connection between things. Like, is it possible to believe in all like this stuff, like you were talking about, like ghosts and energies, but like maybe not be like religious and believe in God? Like, are they separate things, or are they the same thing?
Yeah, I think you can definitely, like, you know, have you ever heard of Robert Anton Wilson?
No.
He's great. Great writer. Really interesting dude. You know who that is? Robert Anton Wilson?
I've heard the name.
He was a fucking brilliant philosopher. You know, he like has a lot of great books. One of them is called Cosmic Trigger. But he talks about like the Illuminati, right? And he says,
Can you explain the Illuminati to me from scratch?
From scratch?
From scratch. I do not know what half these people are talking about.
Yeah.
Eddie Bravo talks about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's this.
Talk about it.
It's his. There's
enlighten me on the Illuminati.
I'll try. I mean, from what I've read, you know, there's like a historic Illuminati that I think started in Bavaria, you know, which was basically, you know, we have Freemasons, Masonry, and the Illuminati it was some kind of society that's, I can't remember the guy's name, that was connected to the Masons. And so that's like the, you can, you know, Wikipedia, the Illuminati, it pops up. It's not like a thing someone made up. It was just like a, there's, I guess the best way to put it is, there's a saying, as above, so below, right? So if you want to understand, or in small things, all things. So to understand the Illuminati, you could probably think about like the university system, the way that works, which is like, if you want to go to a university, you've got to have good grades in school. And not just that, but you have to demonstrate certain qualities. Like if you want to go to like the Ivy League schools. And then if you do that, you sort of get admitted into the university, and then you get like high level data given to you that other people maybe have access to, but they don't get taught it in the way that it's taught at those schools by just like, you know, people who are just super geniuses, you know. And some of the great ripples in society happen because of the things going on in universities. You know, the fucking Unabomber, for example, Kaczynski, man. Look that shit up if you want to trip out. That guy was like getting MK Ultra'd by this professor who was at Harvard, who was getting paid to do these weird tests to figure out if you could break down somebody's identity, you know, because they wanted to, the ideal thing would be like if you can capture somebody, an enemy soldier, and not just fucking interrogate him, but wipe his mind temporarily and put things inside of him so that when you send him back, he would do crazy shit like a time bomb or something. Who knows what? But they were really interested in the identity. People think when they hear this, they think, no, that never happened. It's all documented. You can look it up. Freedom of Information Act. Just look it up. It's all right there online. MK Ultra fucking documents about the many attempts they made and some of the weirdest shit you ever heard. Fucking Kaczynski was being like unethically experimented on by this professor. I can't recall his name. Kaczynski got into Harvard when he was 16. You know, he got into fucking Harvard on a mathematics scholarship at the age of 16, fell under the spell of this like crazy ass mad scientist professor who was doing shit to him that I don't think we'll ever know. You know, putting him in rooms in complete darkness for long periods of time, getting him to tell all his secrets and then humiliating him. Stuff like that. So, Kaczynski.
Scientology.
Well, I mean, science, all, like, what do you mean, Scientology?
Scientology takes your secrets.
Oh, right.
When they brief you, it's called, they go through that system, they take your deepest secrets, and then they hold them against you.
Yeah. That, you know, a confessional.
Confessional, yes.
All of it. The concept is pretty good, though. It's like, secrets are, when you feel ashamed, it's a lot of cognitive weight to carry around. If you have secrets, it feels bad. Like, you don't, you know, there's a sense of like, it sucks. It's not a great feeling. It's weight, you know, you're carrying weight when you have a lot of secrets, you know? So there's good sides to it and bad sides. Clearly in this case, bad sides. You're not supposed to humiliate someone when they tell you their great secrets. You're supposed to forgive them. That's the idea. But Kaczynski, you know, we all know what happened with him, but yeah. So universities, they take people in, train them up in this way or that. Those people go out in the world and they become presidents. They become scientists, you know, and they do all kinds of crazy shit. Hopefully for the better. That's the idea, for the betterment of society. They've gathered all this, like, you know, specific data, you know, about some small branch of like oncology or something. You know, they've gotten this deep, focused, very expensive education, and then they go and hopefully cure cancer, right? That's the idea of a universe. So with the Illuminati, you could ask yourself, what do you think happened first? The university system, Ivy League university system? You think that just appeared suddenly? Schooling people, giving people secret information, like giving people like the big downloads? No, it's been around forever. You know, which is why there were, you know, Masons, the secrets of the carpenters and people who just built shit. There were no books. You would like become an apprentice.
Now, what is a Mason? Because those are the people I yelled at that night.
You yelled at the Freemasons?
There was a big church. I don't know what it was.
Next to the YMCA, there's a church. And I just beeped them all outside with torches. And I beeped them and called them cocksuckers or something on the way there.
They're not.
I think Masons are like a group, isn't it? Like
Richard Pryor was a Mason.
Really?
Yeah.
So what is a Mason exactly?
I don't really know.
They're pretty secretive, aren't they?
Well, they say we're not a secret society. We're a society with secrets. But they, uh, they're just a fraternal brotherhood of people who have been stigmatized in a pretty intense way, but just because they have secrets, because they like are apparently engaged in some kind of disciplined practice that is helping them understand what it means to be like a contributing member to society, basically. Like their whole thing is like helping your community.
How come you're not a Mason?
Well, my dad was a Mason, you know?
No shit.
My grandfather was a Mason. Well, in the South, many people are Masons. I mean, the name Mason, you hear it all the fucking time. But stonemasons, you know, the people who build all the cathedrals and the churches and stuff, that, you know, we take it all for granted, right? Like the fucking arches that hold up cathedrals. We see that shit and we're like, oh, that's beautiful. But we don't realize like how significant in the history of architecture it was when people figured out how to do that, how to like distribute weight in that way. You know, it's fucking amazing, right? And that used to be a secret, how to do that. That was a secret. And the reason for that being a secret, I think, was probably based on a few different things. One would be, I don't want to give you this information if you're not good enough to build one of these fucking things. Because if I give you this information, you go and try to build it, you could kill people. And that's going to be on my back, that I gave you this information and you were like lazy or weak or whatever, and then you fucked up and now everything falls apart, right? So I would imagine if there was some repository of information out there that was like gave people extra abilities or something, like if there was like information maybe about what happens after you die or where we are actually in the universe or what dimension this is and why we're here and what's going on, or and there was some sense that if you told someone that, they would either misunderstand it completely and then like go and yap about it to everybody and cause all kinds of problems, or more often than not, they might go nuts. You know, they might not be able to handle it.
Now, Mason's just men. It's just a men's group.
It's a fraternal organization, yeah.
Which means just men.
Just men.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so wait, just to circle back a little bit to the Illuminati, what are they doing? Do they really control everything? Or is it just like a group of smarter people?
I don't know. I mean, my feeling with it is like, you know, if you look throughout history at the people who make a ripple in history for the better, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, John Lennon, what do they all have in common?
I don't know.
They all got assassinated. They all got fucking shot. So, Jesus, let's throw Jesus in there, right? So my feeling would be like,
Tupac.
Anybody who was making big ripples and telling the truth in a really beautiful way inevitably gets offed, right? And so what you're seeing there is a brilliant person who has contacted truth with a good heart, who wants the world to be better and actively pursues that goal successfully to the point where they rise into the mainstream and things do begin to change a little bit because of them. And then look what happens. Some fucking asshole shoots him. And so my guess would be that if there is like a continuum of intelligence, and if you don't think there's a continuum of intelligence, you're fooling yourself, man. Some people are really smart. I've been around them. And some people are, you know, very distracted, you know, to put it nicely. And so I would imagine that the very smart people scanning the world and looking at what happens when you overtly try to change the world, they're like, I don't want to get fucking shot. I love the world, but is it so effective to enter the world and start telling the truth if 9 times out of 10 you get blasted before you finish the job? So, you know, do they control everything? I don't know, but I would guess that because in nature, camouflage, the ability to camouflage is such an important trait,
right,
when it comes to evolution, you know, when it comes to surviving, that I would imagine that there were probably some highly intelligent people who were more than likely connected via some kind of, I don't know what, some system.
No conspiracy theory here. Do you think like Joplin, Hendrix, and Jim Morrison's deaths were connected in any way? If you had to make a hypothesis, like a fucking if you read documents or the days leading up to it or something.
Yeah, man, I don't know why everyone, I don't even know why that's fucking surprising to people. Look at Caesar. Look what happened to him. Stabbed to death. You know, look, like powerful people are often murdered throughout history. I don't know why suddenly people think that it's like beyond the pale that folks who had any kind of charisma that seemed to be working against whatever the particular system was, or whoever was in power at the time. I mean, look at fucking Nixon. You know, I don't know if Nixon was president when they died, by the way. I'm not sure exactly. But look at what he created, what he the sorrow that fucking asshole harvested in his sick prohibition of psychedelics. Not because he thought psychedelics were bad, but because he didn't like hippies and he didn't like black people. And he wanted to figure out a way to arrest them, you know? He wanted to figure out a way to get into these, like, growing communities and, like, arrest them. And you can't arrest people for ideas. So you need some bullshit reason to do it. So it's like, oh, what do they all have in common? They're smoking weed. They're getting high. They're and also, not only that, but they're smoking weed and they're getting high and they're getting information from it. And even worse, the information they're getting, they're turning it into art. And then art is changing society in a way that doesn't work if you're trying to run a fucking military industrial complex, right? And so if you're running a military industrial complex, your job is killing people. So it doesn't seem beyond the pale that if you are a threat to a like massive global organization that makes money from exploding people, they would fucking kill you if they found you to be a threat. It doesn't seem that weird. It's like, now, is that what happened? I don't know. But I wouldn't, like, if I heard it, I wouldn't be like, are you kidding me? That's crazy. It kind of makes sense. Did it happen? I don't know. But Robert Anton Wilson, to get back to your question, he recommends agnosticism, which is let yourself think these things if you want it. Use your mind to, like, contemplate and think about it, but don't believe it all the way. Because once you do that, that's a slippery slope, man. And that leads to, like, a lot of embarrassment. You know, just ponder it. We're allowed to speculate and look at the world and look at patterns for fun, too. This is fun. I don't know. Were they assassinated? Maybe. I could see why. If I was running a military and a massive organization and suddenly some, like, charismatic hippie was flopping around making beautiful fucking music that was making people not want to go to work anymore and making war seem bad, you know? I don't know. If I was evil, I might do a code tarantula or whatever the fuck they call it.
How do you have all this shit in your head? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I love thinking about it. It's fun.
Grab another water.
Thanks, the man. Refrigerator's there. It's a joy to think about, you know?
Before we start the podcast, you were talking about India and how these Indians, and, you know, one thing that I've always... you know, Rogan's not as spiritual as we are, I don't think. I think Ari, you and I are very spiritual.
Yeah.
We're very aware of our surroundings. When I had Bobby Lee in here, we spoke about it. What did you feel at the store all those years? Not to harp on the Comedy Store guys. I just wanted you to hear it from the talent coordinator.
Sure.
We were talking about energies and entities before, and break down the energies and the ghosts
yeah.
that you felt at the store and your ghost sighting, if you have one.
Sure, man. Yeah, sure. Yeah, so it's like a thick energy. You know, it's like, you know how you can, like, for people, like, it seems crazy when you start talking about this shit, like clairvoyance or, like, you know, what they used to call it being sensitive, you know, in the sense of, like, you know, they wouldn't call it even psychic. They would call it sensitive. So, the way to understand it, if you've never, like, felt a haunted place, though I think most people have, is just think of the difference between hot and cold. Or think, like, when you walk into, like, a super hot place. Like, when you walk into a spa, that feeling. You hit a wall of heat. It's, like, a very specific feeling. It's a dense energy in there. So, like, the next time you're in a very hot place, like, that, feel it. That energy, the shift, the way that it feels weird. It's a different feeling in there. The air feels different. It is different, I'm sure, because of the heat. So similarly, if you use that exact same sense when you go into certain places, every once in a while, it's like you walked into a fog, but there's nothing there. But you can feel it. It's dense. The energy's thick, coiled up. It's thick. So the Comedy Store is like that. It's the energy is, it's very, it's certain places have tendencies. That's a good way to put it. You know, just like certain people have tendencies, certain places have tendencies, you know, repeating patterns. So that one of the tendencies of the Comedy Store is it tends to create really great fucking comics. That's one of its tendencies. You know, it gives birth, spits out these comedians every once in a while that like become very successful. And it has other tendencies too, right? And we know about the other tendencies that it has too. So the energy there is very powerful and real. And if you are very, if you're even, if you don't, the worst thing is to not know you're sensitive, to just think you're normal. Oh man, you are fucked if you go to that place, because it'll start fucking with you a little bit. And which is why all these like people who have a variety of mental illnesses would show up there throughout the years. You know, it almost would draw them to it. But I'll tell you, man, a ghost experience, two ghost experiences that I had there. One, we would have clairvoyants come in there every once in a while, like once a year, a clairvoyant would come in and want to like try to communicate with the spirit of the place because it's a legendary haunted place. And so this clairvoyant comes and they're like, can we just walk through the building? I just want to see if I can communicate with the spirits here. And so we're walking through the building and they're, you know, they're doing the usual clairvoyant shit, which I'm pretty skeptical about, you know, because it's like if you name a certain number of names, you're going to hit something. So the name stuff that they do, I don't know. I don't usually pay attention to it, you know, like I'm sensing a William brothers, some kind of brothers. There was a thing. And also it's a researchable building. So it's like anything you say is not going to make me feel like it's proof of something if you're in a historic building. But you know, that's the steps going up to the belly room.
Yes.
And there's like a sign at the bottom of the steps there. I think it's neon. It definitely has lights. I don't know what.
Inside or outside?
So out inside. The, right. You make the right turn. You go up right. the steps. Up the and step. There's the there, at
there's
least
a sign. There's a neon sign.
Right.
There. Okay.
So they go by that. She goes by that sign and stops. And starts being like, oh, there's a, there, it's a, that's when she's saying it's brothers. There's a, some kind of, so, someone, there's something happen. She's like, dude, it's straight out of Poltergeist shit. And that was pretty weird, but, you know, pretty good act. And then that fucking sign, man, it starts going, it's reacting to her. I'd never seen that sign do that. That I saw it with my own fucking eyes. Now, what that was, I have no idea, but it creeped me out. The other thing I saw there was really interesting. And I think, you know, when people talk about the ghost of the Comedy Store, they're thinking like Casper, something with a sheet over its head or some kind of like, you know, stereotypical ghost concept. But if you think about it more in terms of like an energetic, there's an energetic form there that repeats itself. This will make more sense. And that's what the ghost is. But I was like, I was looking down the hallway at the belly room. And I was just watching some comics and some dumb fight, you know, just fighting, you motherfucker. They were like in a, I don't know the comics where they were like someone in a belly room show, but they were in a pretty intense fight. And I was just watching it. I couldn't hear them. They left, right? And then within like 3 minutes in that very same spot, two different people got in the same fucking fight. Same movement, same like da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm sitting there watching like an echo of the same fucking thing I just saw with two different people. Now, assuming that this wasn't some conspiracy where some weird goddamn freakish improv on the spot people were trying to fuck with some solitary belly room comedian sitting on the couch, then that indicates to me that there was like a kind of eddy, like a ripple that was happening there, like a little fucking energetic ripple that people who weren't protected or who were a little too reactive when they were getting in it, they were acting like it and then, you know, trying to make sense of it later. That's the thing. So many people just do shit and then they try to make sense of it later, you know, like they don't even know why they did it. They just do a thing and then later they try to make sense of it. You know, that happens all over the planet. Like you, if you've been watching this Ted Bundy documentary on Netflix.
Not yet. A couple of people hit me up on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Check it out. I was just so close. Well, let's end one story. where I saw whatever I saw at the store was at the top of the belly room. I was, Mitzi was in her chair in the main room, and I didn't want to walk past her, so I stood by the door watching whoever was on stage, and I felt an energy over my right shoulder. And I kept focusing on the comic, but something was hitting my eyes. Something was making that light not blink, but like somebody was standing in front of it. And when I finally did decide to look up, it was like the person, it was like Kennison. It looked like a Kennison type. Took his jacket, spun it like a cape, and walked into the belly room. And
shit.
I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Whatever I felt. And I could feel his cold air, whatever. And that was it. That was my only ghostly experience at the thing. Back to Bundy. This is the really weird thing with me. When I moved to Snowmass Village in 83, I moved up there July 1st of 83. And, you know, I adapted to the area within 2 months. And one, I had a friend that was a chef that certain celebrities hired him. How he made his living in the winter was people would come in and they would hire him as a chef. Michael Douglas, Sidney Porter, people like that.
Sure.
And he had Jack Nicholas. The guy's name was Randy. And one night we were just walking to a bar that was called, it was like the local watering hole on Friday nights in Snowmass Village. And he showed me the hotel where Bundy first took a woman from. It was in Snowmass Village up in, see if you can find it, Bundy and Snowmass Village.
I think I just saw it on the documentary.
I forget the name of the fucking hotel.
This is the reporter. Is this the reporter? He was like, she was on the news.
I don't remember all the facts.
Yeah.
And then when he escaped from Aspen County Jail, I mean, fucking, no offense, Lee is not a criminal. And Lee could escape from Aspen County Jail.
Okay.
And Lee's not a criminal. Lee could just walk out the door and trick
right.
him. The Wilderness Inn.
The Wildwood Inn.
The Wildwood Inn. There you go. That's where he took the chicks from. He broke it down for me. So now, I'm up at Aspen one day at the In-N-Out. The In-N-Out was a restaurant that my buddy Steve Schiavone, who still comes to my shows when I perform in Buffalo or Florida, because he's retired now. He was a cook at the time at this place. It wasn't even a cook. It was a sandwich.
What was the place called?
The In-N-Out.
It's not like In-N-Out Burger. It's not at all. It's a restaurant.
This is 1983.
Okay. Gotcha.
Half the size of this place.
Gotcha.
Three people could stand in there at one time and order a sandwich. Everybody else had to stand outside.
Right.
And we were talking one day. We were smoking a joint in front of the place.
Yeah.
And he showed me the window where Bundy escaped from. And
crazy.
The path he took. So now I go back to New York. I get my problems. Then I start comedy and I move to Seattle. And in Seattle, Bundy had done some damage. He did some real damage up in Seattle. And one day I'm up in Seattle and somebody goes to me, hey, like somebody who lived in the area goes, Bundy lived like three blocks from here for like a month with a girl. It was well known. It's like when I went to your house one time and you showed me where the Tate LaBianca murders were at up in Glendale, was it Glendale?
No, that's up in Silver Lake.
Jesus Christ, I read that.
It's not the Tate LaBianca, I don't think. It's the other ones. It's like it's one of the murders. I don't remember which murder. Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ, I read that book. I didn't even think it was his neighborhood.
Helter Skelter.
Helter Skelter till I moved
here. That's some scary shit, dude.
That's some scary shit.
You know about Creepy Crawly?
No.
So that's what it's like, some of our neighbors at the time. They've been there they were there.
Right, right, right. That you were telling me when I went there. Did I go there to do a podcast? You were living with a different girl then. This is 7 years ago.
Yeah, well, the neighbors said that all of a sudden, they just like would notice these like fucking dirty hippies wandering around up there, you know? And it was the Manson family. They were like scoping it out and they noticed it, you know? They were like, oh, you know, it's not like they're gonna blend in that area. These are fucking, this is the family, man. These guys, they've been drinking acid. You know, they've been drinking LSD up at Spawn Ranch. Saying shit like Manson could like levitate school buses. And like, did you ever hear that story?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the stories they said. It's like, I think their school bus they were in got stuck in front of some rocks and Manson levitated it and flew it over the rocks and shit. Like, they were high. was Manson levitating school buses, or were they just high on acid? I mean, Occam's razor tells us it's fucking acid. But, you know, that thing where they were like, that guy wanted to kill himself while he was fucking or something. He was fucking one of the Manson girls, and like, she shot him in the face, and he came inside of her while he died or something. Jesus. I mean, these were like hardcore cultists. Like, the Manson family was like, it makes any other fucking cult.
How many people were in the Manson family?
I'm not sure. It's a great question.
Where did it start? Did it start right here in fucking California?
Dude, it's weird. Fucking Manson was like teetering on the brink of being a musician. He's hanging out with the Beach Boys. One of the Beach Boys stole his fucking song, you know? That song, it's called like something. His music is pretty good too. That's the other thing. Manson's music is not bad. It's not like, you could see how like, with just like, if he had just made a left turn instead of a right turn and just met the right person, we'd be talking about him the way we talk about fucking Neil Young. Sure. Dude, he was hanging out with the Beach Boys. That was one of the theories about the house, the Rosemary's, so he killed the director of Rosemary's Baby's pregnant wife.
Yeah.
Right.
Peter Buck, who's the director? Not Peter Buck.
I'm so sad I can't remember. It's one of my favorite movies.
Right. Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
The director, right. Yeah.
But the theory is, and forgive me for the Manson, like, trivia people out there if I'm fucking butchering this, but essentially the theory is they ripped him off, man. They took one of his songs, and they did. Can you Google that? Do you mind Googling this song?
No, I was just looking. There's 12 of them, so what do you want me to Google?
Google Beach Boys stole Manson's song.
No shit.
Yeah, I mean,
is
I want to make
sure. Set him over the top?
Well, that's that house he went to. He thought some producer was there. It was a vengeance killing or something, apparently. It was an accident to go to that house. That's one of the theories, you know. But regardless, these were some fucking... Did you find it?
Yeah, it's the Never Live... Hold on, because I just went up to it. Yeah, his song, Cease to Exist, turned into Never Learn Not to Love.
Yeah, dude. They used chilling with the fucking Beach
Boys. I never heard that before.
This is what I heard. Fucking you invite Manson to your party, and he comes with a swarm of these beautiful, crazy hippie girls. Right. So he was always he was a cult leader. He was already a cult leader. So and he was so charismatic. So he had this like nice orbit of these beautiful Manson girls around him. And like so he was getting, you know, he was kind of like rubbing shoulders with folks and like he was in it for a second, you know. And then so anyway, up in this neighborhood, like all of a sudden, like they noticed these like weird hippies doing like cartwheels naked and shit. They weren't just up there like, you know, they weren't even trying. They weren't even pretending to not be seen. They were doing like weird shit up there, like hippie dances, you know, making out in the grass. Some of them were naked, but they were doing something called creepy crawly, supposedly, which is like they would like break into people's houses and just go through their shit for fun. Like, look at this, man. Look at this picture of this kid, man. Crazy. Woo. Like that. And so, yeah. And then they, you know, the murder started. Right. But, it's a really interesting story when you realize that Manson actually had a brush with the potential for fame. Similarly, the same thing happened with fucking Bundy, man. He was a politician. He was like getting into politics a little bit, you know? Like you see this like...
He went to law school or something.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a lawyer. Something, somewhere it snapped. Like how? Now... See where the Manson family started. Was it in California?
I think it was California,
was
right?
Was it Southern California? And then he recruited a bunch of... And how big were they? I'm curious how many people he had in this fucking...
12. Well, 11 and then him.
So he had 12 people, like the apostles, sort of like.
Whoa.
Well, Jesus had 12 apostles.
That's nuts.
Yeah, California in the late 60s.
I imagine it was more than 12, though. I imagine, like, you know, it's not like people are like, they're killing people up there. Manson's crazy. It was more like... There are these crazy hippies with amazing acid up at Spawn Ranch. You throw incredible parties. We should go hang out. I'm sure there was like
a lot. That's where they lived, Spawn Ranch?
That's where they were, yeah, Spawn
Ranch.
Where
is Spawn Ranch?
I'm not sure.
And then find out who was the director. Because I remember that her name was
Polanski.
Roman Polanski. And then he got in trouble for molesting a 16-year-old girl.
That's right.
Years later, and he's not allowed back into the country. I knew there was just a lot. They took a baby out while it was still alive, and they killed it.
You want to hear the conspiracy theory about Rosemary's Baby?
They wrote Pig on the Wall, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
That's a creepy movie.
You know the conspiracy theory about it? You want to hear a really creepy conspiracy theory? Again, when I say this, I don't believe it necessarily. It's just like, I like conspiracy theories in the way I like mythologies. You know, it's interesting, you know? But one of the conspiracy theories about it is because they, you know, were shooting this sort of like, they got a little, they, you know, these days you see these possession movies, you know, they're embarrassing. Like the possession of Brittany Lindsay or whatever the fuck. Why? Like seven possession movies out there. The possession of Amanda French. And it's just like, there's this depiction of Satanism in it, or the devil or spirits. And it's just like, you watching like, that's such bullshit, man. That's not what it's like. So Rosemary's Baby supposedly was a little too, they hit the nail on the head, so to speak. They showed a little too much about like how some of the shit goes down. And because of that, a message had to get sent, which is like, guys, if you come to our party, don't put it on the screen, man. That's for your eyes only. What are you doing? Were you doing research when you came to our Black Mass? That was for your eyes only. You know, now you're going to fucking turn it into a movie? No. No. And then that happened. They kill, you know, because it's like, it's so fucked up. So fucked up. I mean, I don't think it's true. No, any level of it's fucked up.
Now, killing how much is Eyes Wide Shut true? Like, I heard Eddie and a bunch of people talking one night about Eyes Wide Shut, the movie with the Scientologist. Great movie. I really love the movie.
Eyes Wide Shut? How much is it true?
Yeah, that he goes, they have Hollywood parties like that where you go, and it's a bunch of rich white guys with masks on, and you don't know who you're fucking. Have you heard of those things?
Well, yeah. Well, there's like, what's it called? There's like some like club you could join in Hollywood called Nexium or something.
Yeah, like, it didn't Kate Quigley tell us about that? It's like a swinger thing.
Yeah, it's like swingers. Dude, the reality of it is, man, like, it's...
No, I'm talking about motherfuckers that fuck you and they kill you.
Oh, okay.
And they throw you in pieces by San Diego up.
So the classic theory is this, and I do not believe this, but the classic theory is this. And you can read about it in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, that fantastic scene where Hunter S. Thompson talks about having some like drug that was extracted from the adrenal gland. Do you remember that yes. chapter, right?
Yes.
And he says he got, I think in the, when he writes about it, he says he got it from like some like cultist or Satanist or some shit. But that's called, it's called adrenochrome is the name of it. Supposedly if you like take the adrenaline, so if you take this shit out of someone who got murdered, you get high as a kite. And maybe there's some other shit that it does to you, right? This is all just conspiracy theory. All
right, so somebody gets shot in the street. They take him to the hospital. What do? You take his blood?
No, you take this, like, gland or something. I'm not really sure. I mean, I was watching this wonderful, fucking awesome documentary on NASA's connection to, like, the weird connection with, like, NASA and, like, the SS and the Nazis, and how the Nazis were all like super into the fucking occult, man. Like they were like, there was a thing called the Thule Society and stuff. And like, they were like really doing some crazy shit over there. Besides like the horrific stuff they were doing, there's other stuff they were doing. It's just really weird shit. And like, you know, what happened is we won the war and became a superpower because we got all their scientists. You know, the scientists, the Jewish scientists fled, but many other scientists too. And also a lot of those Nazis, like, you know, I can't remember which company it is, like Bayer or some shit, or like one of the aspirin companies used to like make again, this is, I'm butchering it. I don't know if this is true. So forgive me, Bayer. Like, will you look it up too? Like Bayer and Nazism, or Bayer and like Bayer aspirin and like Cyclon V. Like a lot of these companies were, it's not like, This is the scary shit, man. So the war ends. Thank God, Germany has been crushed. Thank God, it's over. They're blowing up swastikas. They won, right? And they have the fucking trials where they hung a lot of those motherfuckers, right? They hung them, they killed them, but they didn't kill all of them. So where'd they go? Where'd they go? All those Nazis. Where'd they go, man?
Argentina.
That's what they say, right? So many of them like kind of went out into the world. Also, what happened to all the money they stole? Where did that go? Was it all brought back? Did we get all the money back from those fucking occultist psychopaths? Where did the money go, right? So this is one of the creepy things. In you know, conspiracy theory circles, is just like, what happened to all the Nazis? Did we get them all? There's a thing called the Thule Society, you know, which was like some kind of channeling group that was getting information from entities about how to build ships and crafts and stuff and like crazy shit. Now, this is where the problem is, all this stuff is like, all that I'm saying, I've harvested when I'm really high off of incredibly ridiculous websites. You know what I mean? So, and I also, so my articulation of it is probably not even accurate at all. I get a little bummed out, actually, when I see people doing the sort of like satanic panic thing to people who practice magic, you know? Because I think it's like really fucked up, you know, like it's bigoted, I think. And so what ends up happening is you see these like depictions of something very real, which is that there ain't just fucking Judaism and Christianity and Islam and Buddhism in the world, man. There's a lot of other religions too, and a lot of other ways of connecting with the universe. But when people engage in those practices, then they get painted in this really dark way as being evil, minions of the devil, like, you know, cursed or something like that. And I find that to be like a real mischaracterization of something. You
would know? You ever consider joining a cult? I mean, since you've been out here in California, have you met people, have been in cults or anything? Because I don't think California, there's a state that allows them. I think it's Indiana. Or one of those, I've told it on the podcast before, I dated a girl who grew up in a cult. And I, till this day, don't understand it at all.
Cults?
Yeah, they just re-released something about Jim Jones. They just re-released somewhere, because I just saw, I don't think it's Netflix or something. But I just never understood the whole cult thing. And I was intimate with somebody for 4 years who grew up in a cult, and her stories were horrific. I talked to her 20 times into arresting her parents. Like, I would tell her, you should have your parents arrested.
It's a sad phenomenon, man. It's like sad. People, the problem is people don't know what they are. You know,
many, yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Some people don't.
You cannot look at me. We live in San Francisco. I go to Duncan's church. I'm through with Catholicism. I tried being a Lutheran. It didn't work for me. But this guy, Duncan Trussell, it's a religion based on this and his whatever, and I kind of dig it.
Yeah.
And I go there on Sunday so I could feel good about myself.
Yeah.
I just want to feel good about myself.
Sure.
And I don't want to be trapped in the Catholic Church. I want to be involved in my community.
Yeah.
So I walk into Duncan's church, and I like what he says, and Lee kind of goes there with his wife, and they dig it. It's real low key, and it's Christianity light,
sure.
You know, and next thing you know, I'm giving you 10%, and the next thing you know, you come to me and you say you want to move to fucking an island, the whole cult,
yeah,
and we pick up and go to Jonestown, Guyana,
yeah,
you know, like that's where I think the buck ends for me. Like, that's where, but he started having problems up in San Francisco already. Like, when he went to Guyana,
it was
already starting to come out. And he had a horrible drug addiction. He was addicted to speed, shooting it intravenously.
Yeah, man.
Well, do they consider themselves cults? Like, cults sounds almost like a negative, like, obviously, most of them are crazy. I couldn't find it on any state that allowed it.
You fucking think about half the people you've met in the last 20 years in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I say 5% of the people we've met, they could fall into a cult.
Yeah, they follow somebody.
Scientology. Yeah. Scientology has no really religious base to it. It's based on a book by L. Ron Hubbard. And you go in there and they put you next, you know, you're spending $80,000 a year. They don't, like, that's a cult.
What's the difference between Catholicism and a cult?
You go home after Mass.
Yeah, but you go home after Scientology, I imagine. You go home after many. No. Some people do.
Once you get involved with it, you're in there. And then I think once you move in, then you go into normal houses. But just, I've watched what Leah says, and I've watched a couple of that. I watched a documentary on it, and I watch what Leah. Sometimes I watch that show just because my question while I'm watching this fucking show is that how stupid are you? Like, I don't know, and I'm sorry to be judgmental. But while I'm watching all these stories, I'm sitting there going, how stupid are you?
Yeah, like the guy had a fucking anaconda. He took all of your money. He was selling parrots. He was like saying crazy shit.
Which one?
Are you talking about Jim Jones?
I'm talking about any of them. Like, right. I grew up with like the girl I was involved with. The more we dated, the more we got high and drank, she would break down and tell me little things.
Right.
Now, again, if Lee comes to me tomorrow and he goes, hey, man, I loved my experience with you here. I think you're wrong. I'm going to become a Scientologist. I'd wish him luck.
Sure.
And whatever. There's nothing there's nothing I could do, you know.
Well, yeah.
Lee came to me and said, I'm quitting tomorrow. Me, my wife, and the two kids are moving on to the compound. I'm going to have a problem with Lee because the kids are innocent victims. If this is your belief, then join. Then leave your wife and your kids or come home or do whatever the fuck you want. But don't involve them in it.
Can I play the role of a cult leader for a second and argue with you?
Go ahead.
So it's like, here we're doing this thing called society, right? I'm already kind of talking like Manson. We're doing this thing. It's called society, you know? And let's just look at society. The normal pattern that people engage in right now. Think about it. We live in a time period where it's so expensive to buy a house that both parents have to work, right? Mostly. So many people right now, both parents have to work. So we are living in a time where the parents are not being shipped off to a cult compound, but they are being shipped off, so to speak, in their cars to separate office buildings where they have to work 8 hours a day while their kids are put in a fucking daycare center that they could barely afford. And I've heard about some of these daycare centers and people working there and how sad it is. The kids just lay on the floor crying. There's not enough people. They can't afford a daycare center where your kid gets actual human-to-human contact. So you got these fucking daycare centers all over the country filled with kids crying for their parents, completely confused. What the fuck is happening? Their parents, they're fighting. They're stressed out. They want to be with a baby. They want to be home. They can't. They need money. So they're going off to these two separate places to work. Now, if I told you there's a fucked up cult, man, what it does is it takes families and splits them apart. That's the number one thing that you have to do if you're going to join this cult. You go one place, your wife goes another place, and then they take your baby and put the baby in a warehouse. And they don't really take care of the baby that well because there's not enough people there to do it. They're teaching your baby. They're teaching your baby that when you scream and call out for help, no help comes. That's one of the messages of the cult. You would say, that's the most fucked up shit I ever heard in my fucking life. That cult's got to get shut the fuck down fast. That cult is called middle class life in America, right? So as a cult leader, I would say, all right, what system do you think is appropriate, right? Is it to subscribe to the idea that a family is supposed to spend time together on the weekends and in the moments before 9 o'clock and after 5 o'clock? Is that the idea? Is that what we're doing here? That's the plan? I don't know, man. To me, that seems pretty fucked up. Now, if I add to that on top of all this shit, the cult, it takes not a tithe of 10%, but 40 to 60% of the income of the family. And it doesn't take it by putting a collection platter around. It just takes it. And if you don't fucking give it, you get arrested. And they take all your shit. And you become homeless, potentially. And not only that, the cult uses the money. And what they do with that fucking money is they control remote-controlled vehicles in other countries. And they drop bombs on people. You would say, that's a really fucked up cult, man. That's really, really bad. How is that allowed to happen? That's crazy. We should do something about that. You know, so I think The issue is, which cult do you want to be in? You know, do you want to like subscribe to the reality tunnel of, well, this is just how it is, man. This is how it works. No, it isn't. This is how it works. This is how it's working right now. You know, we've
eliminated a class in this country. Over the last 10 years, there's a class that's been eliminated.
Yeah.
There's no more the mom and the dad working and the mom stays home and part-time homemaker, whatever. That's been eliminated in this country. You know, we were talking about it yesterday with Dodger tickets and Laker tickets. How, you know, you look at a Dodger game and when you and I were growing up, it was $12 to go to a game. So you and your brother, 24, your dad and mom, now to go to a Laker game, it's $500 for a family. So that whole experience has been taken away.
Yeah.
As far as life being a cult?
I'm not saying life being a cult.
You could pick your own cult. I mean, you live in your own cult. If you enjoy, you know those people that you meet that come to a comedy store and they tell you everything's amazing. I went to this restaurant and it was amazing. And they have, oh, I went to Duncan's 50th. Oh, my God, you know, and Duncan threw his own 50th party. Those people.
Yeah.
That's a complete different cult.
Yeah.
That's a cult of wanting to belong.
There you go.
Okay, I dress like you.
Yeah.
I put a tattoo on my forearm like you. I have the goatee. It's the skinny jeans. I think that's a cult.
Yeah.
With no leader.
Yeah.
The leader is you in your fucking head.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you're just following everybody else's fucking lead.
That's right.
Me, I'm talking about my friend's parents went to Mexico and met a guy. And the guy sold them an idea of a community, a place where we all worked together. Remember the
sure.
The late 60s was a different time in this country. It was called, he ain't heavy, he's my brother.
Yeah.
So I would say to you, hey, Lee, what if you, me, and Duncan went up to Pennsylvania, bought a farm, we'd grow our own vegetables, we'd be 100% self-sufficient.
Yeah.
The cult that my friend grew in, my ex-girlfriend, they were 100% self-sufficient.
Yeah.
They grew their own pigs, cows. They used everything of the animal. For dessert, they had blood pudding.
Yeah.
Okay. If you go to their house today and sit there, and you look at the mother and the father, and you look at the 8 kids, 4 kids look like the mother and the father. The other 4 kids look like they belong to somebody else. I was the cult leader.
Yeah.
Because he was sleeping with the mom, even though in the room right next door to it.
Sure.
So I'm just going to let you come take my wife and go to the room next door and fuck her while I can hear you. Then he was having kids with these people's wives.
Yeah.
And then that wasn't good enough. Then he started fucking the kids. All those girls that grew up were all fucked up in the head. That's what I don't like. That all that, what you do is you empty the house, you take the kids, you leave the adults in there, you line them up against the wall and you shoot them all. Because they're not going to do the world any fucking good.
Sure.
You're not doing it. You're just shooting people who have no, they sold their soul. They sold their soul for something. I don't know. That's the way I look at it.
I think it's what you're seeing there.
I can't see it. I've never seen
it. It's fucked up. It's horrible. I mean, this is the Mark Twain quote. Religion started when the first con man met the first fool. It's like, if you ever find yourself in a situation where somebody is pitching something, some astounding thing to you, and it doesn't match your instincts, but you decide to like go with them, even though you can feel this isn't right. In that moment, you become sadly complicit in this form of exploitation. You didn't listen to your heart. You listened to the charismatic person and you got pulled in a little bit. And you know, usually the way this shit works is, there's a name. I can't remember the name. Once you've invested a certain amount of money or time in a thing, it gets more and more difficult to leave. Not because it's difficult to leave, because you're stuck based in this fallacy of the amount of dough you've poured into the fucking thing. So you're like, I just got to stay. You know, this is it. This is like that crazy shit that you read about Scientology, you know, which is like at the very, like the one of the highest levels, they show you a briefcase that has written on it over on Hubbard's handwriting, which has got, you know, the whole like Xenu stuff, basically stuff that just seems completely antithetical to your complete understanding of reality. And at that moment, you've put in a lot of dough and you either go, oh, wow. Oh shit. this is kind of embarrassing. Or you're like, well, it must be true. It must be true like the other stuff. It must be true. And you keep going, right? That ignorance is what that's called.
That's ignorance.
And some people exploit other people's ignorance. They're blind spots. A great magician, like a stage magician, what does he do? He knows the shit you can't see. He knows how to distract you and do all the shit. And then like while he's doing that, he like makes apparent magic happen. And it's cool. But you know, it's not real. But it doesn't stop with magic. You know, it like keeps going. So there's people who understand that human beings, and when I said most people don't know themselves, what I meant is humans, if you're raised in an alcoholic family, you're taught to ignore that daddy's a fucking drunk, an angry drunk, or that mommy's an angry drunk. You're taught to ignore that, you know? Or if you're even worse, you're in a fucking family where there's sexual abuse, you know? And you know, if I talk about this, I'm going to destroy the family. And you will destroy the family. So it's easier to forget it, or it's easier to pretend it didn't happen, or it's easier to try to make sense of it in your own fucking head. And it's a really sad thing that many of us have experienced and have done, right? And that is the most sad thing, which is why I love that quote in the Bible when Jesus is talking about, you know, suffer the little children to come unto me. If anyone should harm one of these, it would be better that a millstone were tied to their neck and they were thrown into the sea. And I think in this case, what Christ is saying is not just about children, certainly about children, but also about the other children out there who have adult bodies, but who have no fucking idea who they are, what they are. They've been taught to ignore from the moment they were born, or even worse, to make sense of the fact that their fucking dad's punching their mom in the fucking face, right? Or even worse, to imagine it's their fault. Because, you know, it's easier to imagine it's your fault if someone's hurting you, because then you can pretend you have a little bit of control than to just realize you're being victimized, right? So there are predatory humans in the world who will prey upon that quality in others and will use it. And there's various levels of it.
Welcome to LA. Open up that door a little
sure.
bit for me, just to get some air in here. Thank you. Welcome to LA.
Yeah, look at that fucking, what's that off, that hilarious joke Chappelle has about like the pimp bath, you know, like the joke about how like something about like a pimp will like beat up a prostitute, you know, and then give her a bath. And she falls in love with him because he's giving her the bath, forgetting about the fucking abuse that just happened, right? Like that model of exploitation of human beings is unfortunately, like any other thing in the world, it has evolved and become refined. And what's really sad about it is there's a fuck ton of people out there who haven't even thought about the fact that maybe they're being tricked by someone. You know, it's not, fuck the you know, at least when you're in a compound and you're looking over and Jim Jones is mouth fucking your wife while somebody in the back is stirring a vat of fucking cyanide and Kool-Aid.
Jesus Christ.
At least in that moment, it's something unique. You're like, what the fuck have I done? This is crazy, right? What the fuck have I done? You know, it's so overt. It's so obvious. You're in the jungle. There's loudspeakers crackling with this lunatic who just snorted Valium. He's like, and they're the Russians.
Oh, my God. He was shooting Matt. He was shooting speed.
Yeah. But so many people are just in a situation where they're like surrounded by a group of friends, right? And within that group of friends, there's one charismatic friend, right? And that one charismatic friend, right? This pattern occurs again and again and again. You see it in movies where it's like the gang and then there's the leader of the gang or whatever, right? And you get this one fucking dude who like is like smashing everyone else down out of fear, you know? And like many people are in that situation. Many people are in relationships where they're clearly being abused, you know, where you're not supposed to be there. People are in jobs where they're clearly being fucking exploited, right? And they let that happen. They don't do anything, you know? So it's like, yeah, fuck the cult leaders and fuck anyone who had ever hurt a kid, you know? But not just a child, anyone who'd ever hurt anyone who's like innocent to that degree. Those people, if there's true intentionality behind it, are, I would say, demonic and are in some way, shape, or form representative of a type of energy that I think, is unfortunately in many sectors of society. And hopefully is gradually being diminished by people who are smart and who've recognized it and understand, okay, I know how to do this. We're not going to do it the old way, necessarily. You know, the old way.
Let me ask you something, Johnny Illuminati. Because it's been 3 weeks now. What do you see when you see a little boy?
My mom.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He looks like my mom.
What else do you see besides the fucking nose and the eyes?
Simplicity. I see the beauty of simplicity. I see the hope of the entire, not like my son is the hope of the entire planet, but I see the truth of fundamental goodness in the world. I see that the thing that I've thought in various states of consciousness, from a psychedelic state of consciousness to meditation to the moments I've been falling in love, that, oh shit, it's good here. It's okay here. This place is good. Humans are good. This planet is good. And this is a wonderful place to be. And it's important to be here. It's not just a bunch of bullshit. This is real. And humans have value and they're wonderful. I see that. That's what I see in my child when I look at him. I see that. I see hope. I see the reflection of a truth in the world. And it isn't the truth that everyone these days, or at least many cynical people, seem addicted to.
Are you still walking on sunshine? Like, it's still like all new at the house. It's only been 3 weeks.
Yes. I don't know.
Right.
And I know it's going to get complicated. I know
it doesn't get complicated.
But yes, walking on sunshine, it feels like I'm in the Garden of Eden.
First 60 days, you just see this little child, and then they start looking. First, you see that they notice your voice. You walk in and you go, I got the milk. And they look up and they start kicking their feet because they see you. And now you know you're getting through somebody. They've been listening to you for 9 months.
Yeah, cool.
They've been listening to you for 8 months.
Yeah. You know?
And now they get to see you. Now, I'll never forget the time I walked in the house and I go, hey, Mercy. And she couldn't see, but her little feet were kicking from the excitement. That's a complete different euphoria. You can't match that with drugs or alcohol or even being on stage.
All drugs and all alcohol states and all altered states of consciousness and all momentary experiences are, whether people know it or not, they're going for that feeling that you have when you're holding your baby. Now, I'm not saying reproducing is the only way to get that.
Right. No.
But certainly it is the difference between, you know, like you smell a rose perfume and you smell a rose, right? So there's like the rose perfume's kind of like a rose, but it sure as fuck isn't a rose. And like having a baby and really like not just like the experience of like contacting like the mosaic, the genetic mosaic of your ancestors in the face of your child, but also, finally, having to just put yourself you have to put yourself away.
Away, yeah, you really.
This isn't because
it's not about you.
Yeah,
it's not about you anymore.
That's right. You're not because, dude,
nothing to do with it.
You're done. You're done. Did you think you were gonna be fucking Genghis Khan? No, you're not. You're not gonna conquer more land mass than anybody in the fucking planet. You're not going to fucking invent teleportation. You're not going to be Pink Floyd. You're not going to be Lenny Bruce. No. And it doesn't fucking matter. Because this is better than that. This is better. And there's something so wonderful and humbling in that. Especially for a judgmental cunt like me, man. Because, you know, like so many times I've like, you know, it's easy if you could rationalize your like cowardice or your selfishness as being some kind of like revolutionary attitude, right? And like for me, I would shake my fist at families in a real cynical way, not literally.
Me too.
You know, yeah.
What age did you think children would be a possibility in your life?
Never.
Never.
I went through a period where I thought maybe I'll have a kid. I worked at a summer camp, man. I fucking love kids. Then I just gave up. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I got real, like, I went through a pretty dark period in my life, man. I got real cynical, real numb, and real, like, pseudo, I don't know. I was being lazy, man. And I was trying to, like, make my laziness seem smart or something. Or I was trying to, like, just, like, you know, imitative. You look around, you see the most fucking powerful person around. If they're cynical, you're like, all right, maybe I'll be cynical. You don't even question why necessarily. You just start, or even worse, you're aggressive, so you want to get a charge out of people. So you read some fucking Nietzsche or some shit, you know? And then you get around people. You don't care about Nietzsche, the will, the power, the sheeple, all that nonsense. You know what you care about? You care about telling some dumb ghost story, like throwing firecrackers at people. So you get this temporary rise out of people. You're like, wow, yeah, look what I'm telling you about fucking Nietzsche, man. Anything that doesn't destroy us only makes us stronger. You haven't even thought about what that means. You just say it.
No,
like,
those people just regurgitating shit that, walking around. They don't even know what that, the fucking...
Yeah.
How did you... I mean, not to insult you in any way.
Insult me. Go ahead.
You're a ladies' man. Ever since I've known you, how'd you decide on this one to be the mom of your child?
Holy shit, man. Thanks for that. That's a great question. And it's an embarrassing answer, which is that, because I'd heard this. I'd heard it so many times, and I'd always roll my eyes at it secretly. You know who said it to me? Freddie Soto. He said it to me about Corey. He's like, you know, I met her and I just knew I'm going to marry her. And I remember him telling me that. I mean, like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's not real. And I've heard that, you know, in various other places in a million, like, sort of nauseating romantic movies and songs. But holy shit, man, that's real. It was the craziest thing. And it was like fusion or something. Like, I met her. We started hanging out. And this dawning realization was happening in both of us. It was like, we're going to get married. We're going to have a baby. And I can't explain it. It's like it's like the way the sun comes up. It wasn't like some flash or anything. It was just more like, whoa, this is it. This is like the thing. This is the thing. It's happening to us. We're like.
You guys married?
What?
You're married?
Yeah, we're married.
You guys got married officially before?
Yeah.
The baby.
It happened real quick, man. And I mean, like, it sounds irresponsible, and I get it on paper. It sounds insane. You know, I asked her parents permission, like, because I'm from the South, and that's what we do.
I did too.
Yeah.
I called Terry's father.
When I was talking to her dad, I could, you know, I get it. I think he thought, oh, is this like some kind of thing where you, like, knocked up my daughter or something and now you're gonna get married or something. I'm not sure that I could have been projected, but I get it, you know. But no, what happened was we just wanted to have a baby all of a sudden. I had like 2 months before I've been telling my brother, I'm not gonna reproduce in this life. I'm just not gonna have a baby. I'm not gonna do that. And then suddenly it was the most amazing encounter with truth. And it's all, any articulation of it, it just sounds like a fucking cliche, man. It just sounds like a cliche. So it's like, God, what is it? What is it? When God laughs, when man makes plans, you know, that thing, you know, or like,
true.
Yeah.
True. I didn't think this was ever going to happen.
Yeah.
After the first ordeal, I didn't think it was in my realm. Just the negative thinking about it would keep it away. And
yeah,
it snuck in there. Even the whole thing about marriage and whatever. I mean, I married her and you know, 2 or 3 years later, she was knocked up. It was like and I knew it. I knew it when we first went on our first date. We went to Jack in the Box on the way home. That's how broke we were. We went to Jack in the Box. Wow. And I knew it in the drive-in line that I was going to spend some time with this woman.
That
I didn't know if she was the woman of my dreams or whatever. But just how she was talking to me, I had always dominated a conversation with women. She wouldn't allow that to happen. And I was like, this is the chick I'm gonna fucking be with.
And she's amazing.
Yeah, no, we hit the jackpot.
Yeah, man. To me, it's like the realization that it's painful to think that you're in control. It's fucking painful, man. And like, people want to be in control, but it's a painful thing to imagine you're in control. And there's certain things you need to be in control of, obviously. You know, you need to be in control of like how much you're drinking, how much you're sleeping, these things. That's discipline, right? But there's certain things you have no control over at all. There's like invisible gears in the universe, and they're turning very slowly, and you're part of that. And sometimes, even though your life seems as bleak as it could fucking be, man, and you're numb and you're fucking sad.
Things are still moving.
Yeah.
Just because you're numb, the world doesn't stop.
That's right.
Yeah. It's so fucking weird. It's so weird. This life or this journey so far for me has been, I learned something every fucking day. And then I look at people and I learn from them.
You know?
I mean, you were in New York, you were happy, you had the model girlfriend. Next thing you know, you're back in LA, you marry some chick. 3 weeks later, you're going to have a baby.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you endured the two losses, which I am very sorry for.
Thank you.
I was very fond of your father.
He loved you.
So I've been thinking lately a lot about you on how, because I lost my mother, 30 fucking years ago. It doesn't matter. But for somebody like you to look at that child now and go, I wish Dad could have held on an extra 2 months.
I do.
I wish Mom could have held on an extra 18 months. Yeah. And then, but they're looking down on us. Do you believe they're looking down on that child?
Yeah, man.
I want you to tell me what you believe.
One of the things that happened as he was dying, he's asleep and he had his phone. And he had a picture of the ultrasound. He was just looking at the ultrasound and he fell asleep. But he loved you, Joey. You made such a big impression on him.
Well, he completed you to me. Meeting him made me understand who you were, and we became brothers at that moment. We became brothers at that moment. Yeah. So it was, I'm very proud of you. And
Thanks, man.
Happy for what's going on, and I know you got to get back. The mother-in-law's going to fucking...
Wait, I want to answer your question. Yeah. What happened to him? Sorry to get all teary-eyed, man.
No, I want you to get teary-eyed. This is what this podcast is about. I got teary-eyed, too.
You bring it out of me, man. I had a dream, and I will probably get teary-eyed again when I say this, so I'm sorry. I had this dream after he died, man. And when you dream sometimes about someone who's passed, and it's more than a dream. It's just not a dream. It feels like you're there with them.
They came to visit you.
Yes. So my dad, he lived in apartments most of his life, and my dad loved life. That's why I loved you. And that's why you two connected, because you both have this, you love life. You love life. And it's such a wonderful thing, because whether you're doing great, whether things are down, you love life.
We're alive.
Yeah.
We're alive. What do you mean you lost a foot?
Yeah.
You're alive. You can still eat pussy.
Yeah.
What are you looking at? So what? You can't walk to the store. You got a roller skate. You know what I'm saying? But
that's
you can
right.
still eat pussy. There's always a fucking bright side. I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's it though, man. And that relationship with life is very romantic, and it's wonderful, and it helps everybody around you. And after he passed, I was talking to people who he was always giving gifts to people. I went down to to talk to the people at his apartment, about getting the place clean and everything. And they were talking about how at Thanksgiving, he'd bring him a turkey and stuff. He was always giving. He was but secretly, he never talked about this shit, man.
You don't need to.
And he was in Vietnam, and he had a lot of medals that we found after he passed. Never fucking talked about it, man.
Medals?
Dude, I had someone go through it. I don't want to say it here because I'm afraid, I don't want to, insult anyone in the military by accidentally saying my dad had achieved this or that. But they're really intense ones, man. And they were just in a drawer. They're just in a drawer.
He went to Vietnam.
He was in Vietnam. He went for two tours. And he went, he volunteered to go back for the second one. But the dream I had was... Damn it. Yeah, you got me, man. The dream I had was I was talking to him, right? And he was showing me his new apartment. And he liked it because it was right on the ocean. It had an ocean view. And he was super proud of it. He would have loved that in real life. And he loved it in the dream. And he said, yeah, but I've got these neighbors upstairs. And he's like, they seem like they're your friends. They seem like they're aliens or something. I don't really know who they are. And then like I looked up in the dream and there's like these two Buddhist monks in robes that are like standing behind him. And it was cool, man. It was like a feeling of like, okay, just maybe, maybe, just maybe. Cause like when I was, when he was passing, I was teaching him some mantras, you know, I was teaching him Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani, behold the jewel in the heart of lotus. And he was chanting it a little bit. And as he was passing, he got real, you know, he got real. That's what happens when people are dying. They get real. And we had some great conversations about death and what was going to happen, what I'd heard and what it is. And so, I don't know, it was a really beautiful dream. And it made me, it gave me some hope that whatever happens after, that maybe some people came and like guided him through that process, you know, who were maybe part of the Buddhist Sangha, the Dharma, as they call it. And I don't know, it was just a dream, you know. But I do know this, he died in a really sweet way. He died in a really sweet way, man. And that says a lot about a person. Yeah, and he loved you.
One door closed and another one opened.
That's right.
And now you get to relive your dad through him.
He's got his, you know what's cool? He looks like my mom and he's got my dad's dimple and he's got my dad's hair. So it's the most beautiful thing. I mean, I don't mean, it's just so wonderful.
No, I know when I talk to you on the phone, you're a new person.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
And for everything that you've gone through, this child has cleansed it all away. There's still some pain there, residue.
Yes.
But it's not what it was. I had the same thing. So, listen, like I said, I'm just happy you made time. When are you going to get back into comedy and fucking get Momo back on the stage?
Soon. I feel it. I'm coming back soon. You know, I had to do this.
We miss you at the store. No, no, you have to do this. You have to do this.
Yeah.
Nobody says you got to go on the road. Just start at the store twice a week. See your friends. Talk to other people. You know, everybody there got a kid now. Bill Burr got a kid. Sebastian got a kid. Ali Wong got a kid. Rogan got kids. Tom Segura got kids. Bert Kreischer's got kids. So it's like you're in not only a comedian community now, you're in that parenting comedian community.
I'm going to be back, Joey. Thank you so much.
Tom Papa, yeah. So I'm happy you made it out. Let's keep in touch. I'll come down in about 4 or 5 weeks and do your podcast.
That'd be great, man. And thanks so much, man. You're awesome, dude. You're so funny, man. I don't watch a lot of podcasts. But the energy you guys have with each other is so fucking funny, man. You
fucking killed Thursday night.
Yeah?
You got a heckler came up to him. I thought I was going to die. I just turned away. Like, this is my son.
Oh, you saw it happen?
Fucking turned away because I was like, he's going to fall apart. And I heard this huge, loud explosion of applause. And I was so proud of him because the night before, we had taken some THC. And I left at the 8:45. And I asked him how long. He goes, well, I did the audio and whatever. And he passed out and he woke up at 6:30 in the morning. You know, like when you wake up hungover.
Yeah.
He had that feeling. So I go, let me test his comic skills under those conditions. Because that's going to happen to him on the road one night. He's going to meet abroad. He's going to go back. They're going to get him drunk. He's going to wake up at 5. And he's got to go do the gig feeling shitty.
Yeah.
And he fucking destroyed with flying colors. 500 people.
Congrats. Thank you, buddy. It was a lot of fun.
It's so cool, man. You've been taken under the wing of the true samurai here.
But last night he was in Riverside dying a slow death, so now he's mad at me today.
It's going to happen.
I died last night. What's so funny? Yeah. I died. I go, this is the life, motherfucker.
Let me just say this. You guys are awesome. This podcast is very special. I just hope you all know that. I'm sure you hear from your fans all the time. But anytime it pops up on YouTube and I watch you guys, it's not like you even have to say anything, man. Just when you're bobbing around dancing, it's the energy you're putting out there. It feels real good to watch people like you doing a show like this, man. So thank you so much for letting me be on the show.
No, nothing. And that's it. I'm happy you got the chance to come on. I want to thank Duncan Trussell. I want to thank the Flying Motherfucking Jew. And I want to thank you guys that came out to Brea this weekend and for all your support. Don't forget, Valentine's Day, San Jose Improv. And then the week after that, the 22nd, I'm at Treasure Island. And the 23rd, I'm at Fox Theater in Tucson. The Kidnapper showing up, the Kidnappy. So hopefully everything will be smooth. All right, I want to thank my man, Duncan Trussell, for coming in and making me cry. He cried. I want to thank the Christ Killer for being a bad motherfucker, but most importantly, I want to thank you guys for always having my back, okay? You got the dates, Valentine's Day in San Jose and the rest of the weekend, and then the 22nd in at Treasure Island in Las Vegas with my girl Kate Quigley, and then on the 23rd, the next night, I'm at the Fox Theater in Tucson. Note, I will not be going to Tempe or Phoenix this year, so if you don't see me in Tucson, you're shit out of fucking luck, so Tucson's the way to go. Before I go, I just want to talk about our sponsors for a minute, all right? You want to turn a cool idea into a new website, right? You want to showcase your work. You want to blog or publish content. You want to sell products and services of all kinds. And you want to promote your physical or your online business. You know how you do it? Squarespace, okay? Squarespace uses beautiful templates created by world-class designers with a powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online, plus the ability to customize look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. A new way to buy domains and choose over from 200 extensions. Analytics that'll help you grow in real time. Nothing to patch or upgrade ever. And 24/7 award-winning customer support. That's what Squarespace offers you. So do me a favor. Head over to squarespace.com right now for a free trial. Right now, squarespace.com is giving the Church family a free trial. When you're ready to launch, you use the offer code CHURCH to save 10% off your purchase of a website or a domain. Who takes care of you like me? Squarespace and me. So go to squarespace.com right now and enter code CHURCH right now. You want to get your life going. You want to publish that book. You want to show people your pictures. This is how it starts with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com right now for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code CHURCH and save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com. Enter code CHURCH. I want to thank Squarespace. I want to thank Anna, and I want to thank all of you guys for being loyal soldiers and for giving me the love that I guess I needed as a kid. You guys are my psychotherapy. I love you guys. See you Wednesday morning, ready to rock. Tip top motherfucking Bagoo. Lee, kick this fucking meal. I love you guys. Have a great week. This is the way to start it. That's it. Like a gent.